leaders need to become more comfortable with how to manage remotely. And I think organizations have always had this problem in a way where you hire adults and then treat them like children.
I'm Dan Smolin, and this is the Tightrope Podcast. We tell the stories of people who are defining the future of work. Our guests walk the tightrope, away from meaningless toil, and towards work that is profound, protects the planet, empowers people, and is fun to do, meaningful work. The stories that our guests tell, and the insights that they provide, will inspire you to connect with work and experiences that stoke your passions and make the world a better place. For the future of work is meaningful work. This week we meet author Greg Verdino to discuss his new book, Never Normal, Uncommon Ideas for Leaders Who Don't Settle for the Status Quo. Recording our conversation during a pandemic provided a perfect backdrop for discussing Never Normal and the dramatic forces that have, in an instant, upset our traditional ways of working. With changes in where we work and the work that we do, and so much uncertainty in what it means to work, Never Normal most certainly informs the future of work. We spoke with Greg Verdino earlier this week on Zoom. Greg Verdino, welcome to the Tightrope.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Dan.
You are welcome, my friend. So tee up your new book. You call it Never Normal, Uncommon Ideas for Leaders Who Don't Settle for the Status Quo. What's it about? Why did you write it?
Sure. So it's a collection of 16, I'll call them essays. Most of them began life as a blog post or an article for a newspaper, or even in some cases, a commissioned piece for corporate thought leadership or whatever. And then there's one new essay called Never Normal. And what I wanted to do was kind of look at the way I've been thinking about business over the course of the past number of years, 8 years, actually. The earliest piece was written in 2012. And kind of bring them together in sort of a new context for people to kind of think about, like, well, how does this hold up? What does this mean in a post-pandemic world? And it's kind of the running theme through the book, if there is a running theme, is the idea that a lot of the common logic, the things we've come to assume to be true about the way we lead organizations, no longer holds up, and we need to shift our mindsets and change our behaviors. I mean, that's only, of course, become more relevant today, right? So the impetus for why now was really this idea that I hear a lot of people talking about, you know, acknowledging that the old normal is gone. And then kind of they start pining for a new normal, as if some new period of stability is going to emerge and we can kind of go back to some semblance of the status quo. And I don't believe that's where we're headed. I believe that we need to prepare for what I call the never normal, this idea that we will have to repeatedly and reliably adapt to wave after wave of change, and that ultimately will become the kind of the strategic advantage for the organization will be in its state of always-on change readiness.
You wrote that the lack of resources is something that a lot of business leaders state is a need, something that has to be in place, and you call it a lame excuse. Why is that?
To me, it's about prioritization, right? You hear a lot, you know, whether you're a marketer or an accountant or whatever it is, wherever you are in the business. What you hear a lot of is, well, we can't do that. We just don't have the resources for it, right? And sometimes those are human resources. Sometimes it's skill sets of those human resources. Sometimes it's financial resources. Sometimes, it could be anything, technological resources. But when you kind of dig under the surface, what you find is that for the most part, the resources exist. They're just being diverted to other things. And organizations, by and large, in my experience, don't look hard enough at where they're investing resources in areas that no longer serve the business well. And, you know, the classic case is, you know, many organizations will kind of carve out a 10% innovation budget, right? Whatever the number is. And whether 10% is the right number or not the right number, that's not, you know, let's not worry about that, whether it should be 90%, you know, or whatever. But when the budget gets cut, right, what's, you know, when your budgets get cut in second half of the year or whatever, what's the first thing to go? Not the things that are underperforming. It's the innovations you haven't done yet. So I look at this resources argument as a way of saying, look, we're going to stick with the status quo. We're going to do what has worked for us in the past. I kind of like to say that, like, the way you've always done business is the way you'll go out of business. Mm-hmm. You know, the world has changed too much for us to kind of settle back on these are the things that have always worked for us. So, you know, that's kind of what I'm getting at with this idea of lack of resources being a lame excuse. It's like, it's not. It's just, it's, you've got the wrong priorities for a changing world.
You and I worked for the same big marketing communications company at different times. But the one constant that I think happened in the Puzzle Palace was a causality between senior executives and a control mindset. And I think tied to that is resources. I need to be in control. We worked for a loony bin, right? And
I guess we can say that because they're no longer in business, right?
Worked for a loony bin. They had an on-staff psychiatrist. I mean, come on. I mean, that was my first clue and I didn't pay attention to it, but set that aside. Anyway, senior executives, control mindset. To have control is to garner resources. That's got to be awfully terrifying for people who are 25, 30 years into their careers. What do you say to that?
I mean, it absolutely is. You know, and probably for people who are in some cases 5 or 10 years into their careers, I feel like the sort of the bad habits set in quickly. You know, and I think that there's a lot going on in terms of the way business is changing, right? You know, it's like I've spoken about this, a futurist named Gerd Leonhard has spoken about it too, where like business is an ecosystem with a G, but it's gradually shifting towards ecosystem with a C, right? Where power lies in influence, not in authority, where advantage lies in access, not ownership. It's fundamental shifts in the way work gets done and the way organizations thrive in a world that's so radically different than it was when either of us worked for that marketing agency that shall go unnamed. But, you know, it is a scary thing for a lot of leaders. And, you know, I think in the context of the book, as I've done in my writing over the years, I think in some ways it's almost like a scared straight kind of approach where I just throw the idea out there. It might make you uncomfortable. It might be something you don't want to hear. I might say it in a way that gets you to kind of put your back up and go, wait a second, you're not talking about me, are you? But it's like, it's what you need to hear more than you want to hear. On the flip side, other work that I've been doing in like, say, the Adapt Manifesto, which was modeled after the Agile Manifesto, but kind of looks at this idea of adaptability in an organization. The principles are much more warm and welcoming. I mean, what those are really about is how do you take a leader who might be looking to drive change in the organization, or even a leader who might be resisting change, and kind of lay a foundation for ways in which that leader can adopt and then sort of push through the organization a set of new mindsets and ultimately behaviors, which is still not easy for a risk-averse leader, but at least begins to give them a little bit of a framework for thinking differently.
So you talked about agility. I bring up the term resiliency. Those are buzzwords, I think, in the future of work. How does the never normal mindset enmesh itself into the future of work, Greg?
The never normal mindset is, as I said earlier, fundamentally about change readiness. And, you know, certainly that's very much aligned with the idea of resilience and the idea of agility. And I believe the third, you know, kind of leg on that stool is adaptability. These are not the same things, obviously. You know, when I think about resilience, right, there's a couple of ways to think of it, right? Part of it is the ability to sort of bend and not break, and the ability to kind of get knocked down and stand back up. You know, and then the other, you know, it's also like, you know, one of the challenges, I think, in some ways with resilience. Did I say agility or resilience? The idea of resilience, like you think about a rubber ball, right? You squeeze a rubber ball, it comes back a rubber ball, right? But organizations also need to be thinking about, like, should I even be a rubber ball, right? You know, a lot of, you know, for me, like, the never normal mindset is really all about this idea of acknowledging that there is no advantage in defending the status quo or recreating the past, and that an organization needs to be open to change, embrace change, find strategic advantage in change, not look at disruption as destruction, but as an opportunity for creation. By kind of acknowledging this idea that any change we go through will not be the last change we go through, and not right. settling for a minimally viable transformation, right? As many organizations, frankly, already seem to be doing. You know, people are pining for, can we go back to the office? Or kind of saying, hey, we're all on Zoom now, check the box, we're now a digital organization, thinking they've done it, right? You know, Zoom calls are not digital transformation. Work from home is not the future of work in and of itself. It may be, you know, distributed workforce, yes. Location fluidity, yes. Sort of permeable boundaries of an organization, right? Between gig and full-time and freelance and consultant, yes. All of these things are components, but we need to be thinking about what is the next intentional change our organization can make to become a stronger organization and potentially even ultimately become a very different kind of organization than we are today.
I think that's brilliant. You know, I interviewed George Brett, who is the de facto inventor of onboarding, the process that helps new talent sure. integrate properly into an organization. And it's great. And I used it a lot in my recruiting career. And one thing that we talked about when I interviewed him back in the spring is that, you know, pre-pandemic, 9% of us worked from home. During the pandemic, it's like, I don't know, 40, 50, 60, who knows? But, you know, once this thing ends, it's not going back down to 9. It may go to 20, 25.
Yeah.
So that's a huge shift in never normal, you know, is that I may work in my home. By the way, Room Raider called. That is an A-plus background, my brother.
And it's real.
It's real. Yeah. Yeah. It's not the Brady Bunch kitchen like I use on my fun calls. Anyway, sorry to digress, but the idea of work will not be confined to a place and may not be confined to a 40-hour work week. It'll happen when it needs to happen, when inspiration hits. And that, I got to imagine, is terrifying for a lot of people, but it's also very liberating.
Right. It's both of those things. And, you know, it's, I mean, to me, it requires people to embrace ambiguity. And when I say people, it's workers, right? As well as leaders, right? Embrace ambiguity in an entirely new way and kind of embrace, you know, the power of and, right? There is no clear black and white between, you know, everything's gray. Like we will, you know, to kind of build on, you know, maybe we go from 9% to 20%. We're at 50 or 60% now in terms of work from home or remote work. You know, we're seeing some organizations say we're never going back, Twitter. Other organizations saying we're not quite sure, but certainly not before mid-2021. You're seeing other organizations like Siemens saying, you know, we'll never require you to be here 5 days a week, but we will want you here 2 or 3 days a week. The other 2 days you can be remote. You know, so it's this kind of, am I in office? Am I out of office? Does it make a difference, right? Am I remote? Am I in the office? Am I full-time employed or am I, you know, a freelance? Like all these things will be ands, right? You know, and that requires I think a very different way, you know, of thinking about work, where it's not the place you go, it's the thing you do, right? You know, when you say go to work, right? Then that's almost like, it's clearly become a kind of that phrase is like a relic of the industrial age, right? You don't go to work, you take your work with you wherever you go.
I think part of this is infected with the angst of so many young parents out there who are now experienced homeschoolers.
Yeah, I don't know about experienced, but certainly homeschoolers. And it's a challenge, right? And that's, again, I have a 16-year-old who can more or less take care of herself and doesn't want my help. because she's 16, but a five-year-old who, you know, when school goes back and schools are opening here in New York, and he'll go back on September 14th, but he might be coming back on September 16th, right? We don't know. And we're seeing that happen in other places already, right? Where a school district will open and 2 days later there's a COVID outbreak and they have to close the schools again. Like, even not knowing what that's going to look like, how that affects work from home, how that affects ability to go back to the office, it's all so uncertain. And that's why I believe we need to acknowledge that this uncertainty is the steady state for now, and that, you know, we need to be prepared to, you know, kind of chart a course and then reverse the course and be very nimble. And this speaks to agility, certainly, you know, and the ability to adapt in the face of change as it happened, you know, rapidly, and certainly rapidly enough to not get stuck and fall behind.
You know, I interviewed Dan Pink last week, the author, and we talked about this idea of, well, so John will now get to work from home. He basically said, yes. However, his boss will be measuring his keystrokes and looking to see if he's in front of his camera. How do you break that? There's probably a relationship between the size and scale of an organization and the tendency to do mishigas like that.
Yeah, I mean, that is a tough habit to break. And I'm seeing that. I talk to people who work for larger, more traditional organizations who at first even resisted the very idea of letting their people work from home until it became impossible to do otherwise. Literally weeks, if not a month behind, you know, everybody else going remote, you know, some of these people were like, I'm still trudging into the office and, you know, kind of crossing my fingers, I'm not the next one to go on a ventilator. And then when that person started working from home, it was exactly what you described. Like, it was like, you know, 25 times a day check-ins and, you know, kind of, I just called you. Why didn't you answer your phone? I think it's going to ultimately, and it's not an easy process or an overnight, you know, kind of flip the switch kind of thing, that leaders need to become more comfortable with how to manage remotely. And I think organizations have always had this problem in a way where you hire adults and then treat them like children.
Right.
And people who have learned to manage that way now need to relearn. You know, there's a, what's his name? I'm forgetting the name now. It's like so bizarre. I reference him all the time and I use the quote all the time. And we've integrated the principle into the ADAPT manifesto. Alvin Toffler. How do you forget a name like Alvin Toffler, like the world's most famous futurist? He's in one of his books said the illiterate of the 21st century won't be those who can't read or write, but those who can't learn, unlearn, and relearn. It's true in so many areas. You could apply that to technological upskilling, for example, but it certainly applies to the way we lead. You know, so it's like, how do we unlearn the way we learned to lead from our boss when we were 21 and relearn an entirely new way to lead an organization?
You mentioned Alvin Toffler. I'm going to make you blush. His niece, Marjorie, listens to this podcast.
Oh, so I shouldn't have forgotten his name.
I love Toffler's work. And he, in the third wave, he mentioned a place I went to work for called Cube, Q-U-B-E, which was the world's first two-way interactive cable system. You know, yeah. And cable systems were all completely analog. His voice would really resonate right now. We are in future shock in many ways.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like others have used a similar sentiment, but it's like actually more like shock of the now, right? It's like, if the rate of change was such that it would induce future shock in 1970, right? You know, with change being exponential, it's like so bad now. Like we can't even see past today. It's crazy, right? But it is the reality we live in.
You and I came out of the agency space, so to speak, and the space we were in got very big to the point that really great companies like the one we worked for got gobbled up and then got gobbled up again and now are unrecognizable. I look back at some of the companies I worked for. I can't really tell where they are right now or who owns the assets because there's been so much acquisition going on. I look at Never Normal and I think to myself, is that going to be the death of really big companies? I mean, because big companies rely on a certain amount of status quo. And to get to achieve financial scale, you have to have a lot of control in place. What do you think about that?
You know, I used to like to think in absolutes. I don't like to think in absolutes so much anymore. And maybe that is an element of sort of never normal thinking or adaptive thinking. I think a lot of large organizations will indeed struggle. I think that they are struggling, right? You know, we're seeing, you know, for all of the things that a large organization has to its advantage, right? The resources, whether they allocate them in the right way or not, the ability to attract talent, the customer base, the brand equity, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's ironic that large organizations have, you know, failed to lead through some of these things that have been transforming around us, right? Because of their reliance on the status quo. I do think that large organizations have a challenge. And I think it's, you know, even more ironic in the world of marketing, right? Where your audience, in theory at least, has become smaller and smaller in the sense that the promise of one-to-one marketing has become more and more a reality over time. I mean, that was the premise of my marketing book 10 years ago, micro-marketing, that kind of small is the new big, I guess, to paraphrase Seth Godin. But the premise was that we don't need to market to the masses. We need to market to the passionate few and then let like the magic happen, right? And we're seeing that play out today in micro-influencers and so on and so forth. But as this trend was happening, the marketing agencies were getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And the work they've been producing has been more generic and more generic and more generic and more generic as humans have gotten, you know, have gained the ability through the magic of the internet and everything else to embrace the more specific, right? If you're into, you know, Nordic cat death metal, you're going to find a community of people and somebody who's serving that community. But agencies think the answer to that is to become bigger than before. And I was actually talking to somebody just earlier today about this sort of challenge where the more data we have, the better we understand the individual customer, the less creative we become in ways of engaging the individual customer. And the same is true for, you know, employees, you know, quite frankly, especially when you get into large organizations and or education, right? Creating a one size fits all infrastructure and shoehorning everybody in. So I do think that's going to continue to be a struggle for organizations. And I know maybe a large organization, I don't think this is a perfect solution, but maybe a large organization needs to think in terms of kind of creating the two-speed organization, right? Mm-hmm. Where you've got the folks who are optimizing day-to-day operations because you can't stay in business if you can't keep the lights on. But at the same time, making sure that there is a part of the organization that is responsible for innovation, whether that's incremental or moonshot, and then for bringing sort of and then kind of socializing and then scaling it back into the organization over time.
Never normal to me really informs the future of work from the standpoint of what does it mean to work. Within my own household, my wife teaches gifted kids, but that's not all she does in a day. She has two storefronts, one on Estee, one on another channel. She sells vintage clothes. Mm-hmm. I'm doing my thing. Together, we're doing things. It used to be you had a job, you went home, your day was carved up into thirds. The experience is so different now. And I think a lot about that typical American icebreaker when you meet a stranger and the third question in is, you know, hey, Joe, what do you do? How do you now do that?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm running a fulfillment operation. I'm a podcaster and I'm running a media company. How do you make that resonate?
I dread that question. I dread it. I didn't like it back in the olden days when I had to admit, oh, I'm in advertising or I do direct mail. Because then you get the sideways glance, but you're absolutely right. You know, right. You know, my wife and I together run a content marketing agency.
There you go.
I'm an author. I'm a speaker, right? You know, I make music on the side. I'm doing Adapt Manifesto. My collaborator on Adapt Manifesto and I are working on an e-learning company to start to kind of train and certify people on some of those principles. You know, and at the same time, of course, I'm also, you know, by default, you know, at the moment, a homeschooler, a babysitter, or whatever. there's almost no way to, you know, to introduce yourself other than to say I'm a person, right? At this point, it sounds ridiculous, but like, what do you do? I can't answer that question anymore. And you're right that this is what work looks like now. And I don't think we're going to go back. We can't shove it back into the box. Of course, some people will, you know, and this again comes like the power of and, you know, not, you know, kind of, you know, thinking it will be absolutely one way or another for everybody in the world. But, you know, there will, I'm sure, be people who, I'm a lawyer, I'm just a lawyer, I've always been a lawyer, I've worked for the same firm for 43 years, I'm retiring with my gold watch. That is much rarer than it was in, let's say, our parents' generation. But everybody's experience of what it means to work and what it means to live is so unique at this point, which sounds trite and weird, but that it's, you know, the future of work is flexibility in a lot of ways.
Right. And I hope liberating. Greg Verdino, this has been fun. I haven't seen you in like 25 years. So thank you. Thank you. And congratulations on your new book. Point our listeners to your social media so they can learn more about Never Normal.
Sure, absolutely. So, well, my website is gregverdino.com. If you can spell my name, you can find me pretty much anywhere. So Twitter is a great place to find me, at Greg Verdino. I'm, of course, Greg Verdino on LinkedIn and all that kind of good stuff, too. And the book is available everywhere, Amazon, wherever books are available. What is that they used to say? Wherever fine books are available. Online.
Very good. Thank you so much.
Links to Greg Verdino's social media are provided in the show notes for this episode at dansmolin.com. Please join us again for more inspiring stories from people who walk the tightrope to seek and do meaningful work. You can subscribe to us where you get your podcasts or listen to current and past episodes on our website at dansmolin.com. I'm Dan Smolin, and this is the Tightrope Podcast. Together, let's walk the tightrope to find and do meaningful work, for the future of work is meaningful work. And do remember this, our best days lie ahead. Let's connect again next week.